The Survivor Specialists are back, and today I am joined by Philip Solomon as we dig deeper into episode number 3 of Survivor 49, all of that chaos that went on last night. Will and I had a pretty heated discussion there, Philip, so maybe you'll come in here and level things out, or maybe you'll make it even more heated. We'll see what's going to happen. Welcome back. Always nice to have you on.
It is a pleasure to spend some time with my favorite Phil, America's favorite Phil, not me. Definitely you. Definitely you on this.
You were the fill-in on Australian Survivor when I was in Europe. That was very clutch, and I appreciated that you said that. It was still the Survivor Specialist, Phil and Tegwith. It was just a different Phil. That's all.
It happened. It was just slightly more Hellenated and aggressive. It was fine. It was good.
And for anybody wondering where Blake is, he got called into sub today, so he's not here. Congratulations to Blake. After he had that interview with Rachel, he said, maybe this will be the turning point of my life. And now he can't be here to podcast because he's too busy working. So Blake's life is already on the up and up, Philip, even if it means he can't be here with us.
Listen, Blake and I was going to finally bury the hatchet. We were going to move on. We were going to move forward. And he was like, you know what? I'm not showing up. And I'm like, okay, you know what? That's fine then.
He actually called them and said, I'm desperately begging you to please let me work today because I just don't want to do this podcast. I don't want to sit there with this guy. So what are you thinking about this season so far, and how did you feel about what went down last night?
The season as a whole, I think that we are finally running to the end of the whole have to do three tribes to start thing. I think that it was super interesting when we started. We were like, oh, this is new and fresh and exciting. But at this point, the numbers are just too small. And so now you're just getting these three tribes of six, and their real goal is to get to four. And they've all said, as long as we have that, we have the majority and we're good. And the issue with that is they're more concerned with the numbers than actually making real relationships. Mm-hmm. It's giving, you know, that game on Squid Game where they just had to get a certain amount of them in like the room and it didn't matter how many this past season. It's really giving that. And so they're not really working with the people that they're passionate about or they're trusting. They're just going, well, this is the majority, so I guess we'll just ride this out until something else happens.
Yeah, and it's a bummer when something like last night happens where you get a medevac and then a boot, and it's both from the same tribe, and that's the tribe that's already been losing, because I was complaining a lot last night that, you know, this is 5 of 6 seasons now where we've seen the same first act, and I do think that even if Jake hadn't been pulled from the game, if they win, you know where the other tribes are going to go. It feels like you already know who the two on the outs on all of the other tribes were. And what makes it really hard, and this is what I was arguing, this on my Patreon earlier today, when you have two tribes, before a swap, you're almost, in almost every single iteration of two tribes, before a swap, both tribes go to tribal council. So there's a relevance to the conversations that are happening.
Yes.
The problem with three tribes is, normally there's one tribe that doesn't go ever. And when that happens, you still have to show that tribe, but none of it matters. And now in this case, Hina and Uli, nothing they've said or done has actually mattered to the early portion of the game, because now they're going to swap all of that. Oh, I don't know if I trust Matt. It might not even be people from Matt's tribe who vote him out if he goes.
Yeah, I think that it's just... We want the people in the other tribes to feel relevant, like they're in the game, but you're right. They're not really in the game yet, per se. And so like they are still competing and making the relationships, but it would be great if it just feels like it's all pretty low stakes and that their decisions don't really matter as of yet.
Yeah, exactly. So that's going to be tough. Somebody in here says, why is he always on a Survivor chat? I'm so confused. Cause I like him. That's why Philip's here on the Survivor chat, because I like him. And because I like talking to you, and I like when you come in here and you talk. I like doing what we've kind of figured with digging deeper is going a different perspective. And we weren't getting guests really for this show the last couple of years. And I said, what if we just get people who haven't been on Survivor to kind of dive in a little bit more? And I think it's been working so far, and I think it's a lot of fun, especially coming off of last night's episode. Like, you're here. You've played a reality TV show. Like, you've played Deal or No Deal, but you've never had to go through something like this, and you're watching this. So you're in that kind of weird limbo of, okay, I've never played Survivor, but I kind of know how we're supposed to react in these situations. What did you think about all this stuff with the snake?
All the stuff with the snake. To be honest, okay, so this is the insight I can bring to this situation. when you're on the beach, when you're outside or whatever else, there's never a camera crew with you unless you're having a conversation with someone else. And so because we see Jake sitting alone, everyone's like, well, why were the cameras not on him when there was a snake? He was probably sitting there alone for like a half hour. And like, as soon as someone else walked up to me, that's when I got the cameras and the mics and all that other stuff. But if you're alone, they're just not filming you. There's nothing interesting there. And so in turn, they were like, oh, he's like having a thought. And then they kind of walked away. And that's when it all went down. My favorite part is when Jake kind of tells everyone that he's been bitten by the snake. It is the most Canadian shit you've ever seen in your whole life, because he's like, hey guys, minor inconvenience. I might be dying. I'm sorry. Everyone's like, wait, what? Like, he doesn't seem alarmed, but it's a full snake. And I was like, yeah, any American would be full on panicking.
Oh yeah. I mean, and I think it was, that was what was so interesting about this. Like, I've never been bitten by a snake. I don't know anybody who has been bitten by a snake, but it was this reaction of, well, that was kind of weird. I just kind of got a pinch. Right. And so yeah. I wonder if it was a venomous bite, would it have just felt like a pinch, or would there have been more pain that was associated with that? Because obviously, I mean, you get pricked with anything, you get bitten by anything, you get stung by something, it hurts. But yeah, it was very interesting how he went. And I didn't mention this last night, but I really appreciated Alex's approach to this when he wasn't telling Jake how bad it was. I thought that was really good, right? You're going in, you're kind of helping him out. He's already going to be panicking. He's already going to be having a hard time. And I appreciated that Alex just was like, all right, let's pump the brakes. It's going to be good. And then as soon as Jake was on the boat, he said, this might not be good, everybody.
Yeah, I think that I really commend the producers and the editors on this episode, because I feel like Survivor has always held its cards so close to the chest as far as like breaking the fourth wall and stuff like that. And they always kind of like show what they want, but not everything. The sheer fact that like, I've had a lot of friends that are on the show that they're like, there are people that say you can eat this, you cannot eat this. Mm-hmm. That's a poisonous plant. You can't. And so like, that's one of the things that like a few of us that have friends that have played, we know, but like no one else at home really knows. So the sheer fact that they were like, hold on a second. And they actually like showed mm-hmm. you, they get specific pictures and stuff to like of things to avoid. And I really love the idea of just pulling back the curtain just a little bit so that we're like, oh, this is actually bad. Okay, cool. Great.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, showing the book was a big thing that people were talking about, because that book has been out there on that island for such a long time. Mm-hmm. And I think since season 41, it's been the same one. It might be even longer than that. And so to show you kind of, this is what the people have, right? There's a box where there is sunscreen, there are contacts, there are pills where, you know, obviously if you have something where you can't play Survivor, you can't, you know, whatever medication or prescription, but there are people who are playing this game who have prescriptions, who are still continuing to take those prescriptions while they continue to play the game. And I think that gets lost on some viewers, especially the ones who don't dive in and listen to the podcast and everything like that, the way yeah. that we do. And so I really did also appreciate that they went there and said, hey, here's our bag. This is our, here's what's going on. And they went that route. What I complained most about last night was the way that the medevac was explained was what confused yes. me. And I think some people in the comments from last night, I just want to address this here in case anybody from 49 is listening or anything like that, and it was construed differently. I have no problem with Jake leaving the game. I have no problem if Jake chose to leave the game. I think that that is absolutely 100% one of the correct decisions you can make here, because you're terrified that you could have just lost your life. And honestly, like, even though it wasn't venomous, like, I understand you saying this is enough for me. There's no weakness there. You can still come back and play Survivor again in my book. Like, I have no problem with that. It was strictly on how it was explained. And I know some people have been saying in the comments and stuff on the last video, well, somebody in my family is a medical professional, or this is a medical. I don't have anybody in my family who's a medical professional. I'm not a medical professional. So when I hear it's not venomous, and then I hear we can't put you back out there because of the emotional whatever, that's where I go, well, wait, what does this mean? And I'm going to read a quote from Jeff in a little bit, but I want to get your thoughts on that first.
I actually did the research last night because I knew that I was going to be here and I didn't want to look stupid. And so I was like, right. So I was like, what actually happened? And I will say that it was not properly explained on the show, but on the On Fire podcast, that gave us real information. You're like, got it. Cool. Great. So once you've been bit by a snake, they were like, we still have to really kind of monitor your levels and everything, they said for 48 to 72 hours afterward. Mm-hmm. And so they said that there really has been between base camp and the island is a half hour. So they said, worst case scenario, if something went down, no one could get to Jake for a half hour. The only reason they did the medical evac out was because there happened to be a boat there dropping off something else. And they were like, it'll probably be quicker to move him than bring all of them out. So they moved him out and it took about 45 minutes. And what we see is the man that hopped off the boat was not the happy-go-lucky Jake that hopped on the boat, because I was like, uh-oh, he's going down quick.
Yeah.
And they just said that they had to keep eyes on him for 48 hours, 72 hours, to the point where they couldn't even take care of him in Fiji anymore. He actually had to get taken care of in Australia. So I'm friends with Jake, spoke to Jake, and yeah, he was at a hospital in Australia before they even let him go home, because they were like, we don't have the resources here to handle all that. Yeah. So I think it's a cross between wanting to tell the story correctly, but you don't want to alarm Jake and alarm everyone else in the room of like, it was a little bit more serious than they let on.
I wish that, you know, and look, that all makes sense to me. I wish that they would have just said that in the episode last night, though. Like, why couldn't the doctor have just said, look, we need to monitor him for 48 hours just in case? Because we got the comments of, we're going to treat this as if it's a venomous bite. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. But then it was, this is a dry bite. And it felt like, so you're not in danger here, but you can't go back in the game. And as a regular audience member who's just watching it saying, you know, I'm not going to go listen to the On Fire podcast, right? That is a, to get that information on the On Fire podcast, I just feel like that should have been in there. And look, I understand you're doing this. This is authentic. This is a very stressful moment. What a lot of people don't understand is Sam Phelan had made a comment, and I'm going to have him on the podcast on Sunday, so I'll give him his shout out now. But he had made a comment about, this is probably the scariest moment in the history of the show. And a lot of people said, a guy fell in the fire. Caleb almost died. Russell Swann almost died. The problem with this one is, my dog is scratching because the thunder is happening, so I might have to let her in a second here. But the problem with this one is, with Venom, it's such a ticking time bomb, and you don't know what's going to happen. With the fire, you could see with Scoop, and it was, okay, hands are burned. He's up, though. He's moving. Caleb and Russell, you're worried, but you can get that done. You can figure it out. But when it comes to this one, you don't know how quickly or how bad this is going to be. And it can sneak up quickly based on what people have been saying and researching and everything like that. What I wish, though, is that when it all came to it, the cameras are rolling, everything's kind of calmed down. If they would have just had the line of, hey, Jake, we can't put you back in the game because you need to be monitored for 48 to 72 hours, that clears everything up for the audience. And I know that some people have felt that Will and I nitpicked on this, but I do think it's important because this show is being made for 4 million people who aren't going to be on that island. So I need to stand up and get my dog in here, but you keep going.
Okay, deal. Okay, so I guess we could talk about this in the comments till Phil gets back. My question for all of you is, it was also brought up that Jake received medical attention and electrolytes and liquids through an IV. So putting him back in the game technically was an unfair advantage, especially when you look at the rest of his tribe that's been hungry and dehydrated and all that other stuff. They couldn't treat him like that. So they had to make sure he was at a certain medical level. So now what I'm asking you is, as a player, when he comes back, are you like, that's unfair? Or are you like, thank God he's okay, let's just let it be water under the bridge?
So here's where my complaint is. And this is the quote I want to read. Season 44, Brandon got an IV. Brandon Cottam got an IV on the island. I remember making a big stink about that on this podcast, because I said, look, I had a massive surgery. I talk about this all the time, but I had a massive surgery where I had to get part of my colon removed. And when that process started, I was so dehydrated and like so out of it, they had to put an IV in me, and they couldn't even find a spot on me because I was so dehydrated. They did it in my bicep, and within an hour, I felt so much better. And I was literally dying. Like, I was turning purple on this bed, and I was in such bad shape. And now all of a sudden I'm feeling good. So I made a big stink out of that, because I said, wait, these people are hungry. These people are like thirsty. And now you're going to get an IV. So Brandon had gotten one. So that's my one complaint there. My other one is, I got to read this quote. So this is from Parade Magazine. This is an interview that Mike Bloom did with Jeff. And I just want to read this part of the quote, because I think it's important and I think it's contradictory. two. So he gives, he says there's three reasons he does the number one, which was about Australia. Then he goes two, he'd gone through so much emotional upheaval that he was drained. So even if Dr. Barry thought he was fine, you just couldn't put him back in 110 degree heat in the middle of the jungle. And then the third reason would be fairness, because if you really want to get into the nitty gritty, he had a lot of IVs and fluids and all sorts of things being injected into him. Could say, well, that's too much of an advantage, so we made the right decision. Those two points to me feel very contradictory of he was in such upheaval that it was too dangerous to put him out there, but he's also too hydrated and everything. Like, it just say that the reason was you had to send him to Australia.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that it was, you could almost tell when, like, you know, when the adult, the grown up in the room has everything under control, but if you look in their eyes a little extra, you're like, I don't think they had this under control. It really looked like they were all like, this is what we're going to do, right? And everyone's like, like no one seemed exactly sure, because it's such a rare occurrence on the show. They were like, we've had plans for it, but we just never thought we'd have to use them. So like, I don't even think they knew what to do per se.
I agree. And look, this is, again, last night I was more having the conversation about what as a viewer I was thinking was missing, but at the same time, this is unprecedented. They got to figure out what they're going to do. I mean, remember back in season two, they never thought they were going to break the fourth wall and have to have the medical team out there while somebody was having a serious emergency. Yeah. And we've seen them do this in the past, and I do think it was handled well. That was my biggest complaint. And, you know, I'm happy for Jake. He got to get home, be there for the birth of his child. Everything went well for him. I know some people on the internet are saying good and stay gone. We don't want you back on the show. I disagree with that wholeheartedly. I think that Jake was amazing on this season. I thought he was a lot of fun. I'm very happy to watch him come back and play again. I know Torch of the North had put out a post from a quote from Jeff that said something along the lines of unfinished business. We love players with unfinished business. Great. They're learning that returning player seasons matter. Season 50 is going to be returning. Jake's probably going to be on season 52 or 54, depending on when the next returning player season is and if he's willing to go back out at that time.
I think all the things that audience members didn't like about Jake and reading them on like Reddit and Twitter or whatever else is like typical first time on a reality TV show shit. But all the things that they did like about him are his actual personality and attributes. So that makes sense. So I think when he comes back, he will come back stronger and he will be an easy fan favorite immediately.
Agreed. And I do think, I mean, look, I didn't mention the irony of this last night, but a lot of people have pointed it out. The shoe bandit doesn't wear shoes and gets bitten on his foot, eliminated from the game. That's good editing. That
if
is good.
If he was
editing.
Wearing shoes, this man still would be there if he was wearing shoes.
Yeah, he had 14 pairs of them. Just put one pair on, Jake. That's all you had to do.
All on the left.
That's all you had to do. So look, that was a big, that's obviously the big moment of the episode. That's what people are talking about. That's what the focus is on. We also had Jeremiah going home here, and I want to talk a little bit about Jeremiah, because Jeremiah goes out in the situation. He had said in an interview that he was hoping like that there was a possibility of a 1-1-1 or something along those lines, and then potentially on the revote they would just vote out Alex if he didn't play his idol. What's your take on Jeremiah and just the way this whole situation went down too?
Well, I actually have a Survivor newbie question for you. I'm not like new, but here's the thing. Since pandemic, I went back and watched them all. So like I am knowledgeable. I just don't have the years underneath me yet. And now I have to go back and watch Australia for obvious reasons, because you're not going to make me look stupid twice. Anyway, so just in getting to see people quit the game and then get evacuated from the game, what are the hard and fast rules as far as they don't do an elimination that night because someone got evacuated or quit? Because I was trying to look for like the rule consistency and I still don't think I know it.
There is none. Because The only other time that I truly remember this happening, so back in the early days, if somebody got medevaced, that was it. Because a lot of times in the early days, it was the 13 episodes were set up to get you to a final four by the end. Yeah. And that was how it was going to go with 16 people. So when you go to Panama, Bruce is getting medevaced. That's it. When Austin quits the game, that's it. The only one that I can really remember that stands out to me big time, other than when Zach Wurtenberger also went out in, was it Zach? No, it was in 44 when Matty Pomia went home after Bruce had to be pulled from the game too. And I think Zach as well when Jackson got pulled. So in the new era, they've been more willing to do double boots early because they have two double boots accounted for, right?
Yeah, totally.
But in season 32, when Caleb goes down, because it was after the immunity challenge, they still made the tribe that lost go to tribal council and vote somebody out. And it's actually very weird because the way that that goes down, for anybody who doesn't remember it, you watch this whole situation, the episode, it's about 50 minutes or, you know, I guess the episodes were an hour then. So you're talking, it's 75% of this episode is dedicated to the situation with Caleb. And then all of a sudden it's just, oh, by the way, the Braun tribe is going to tribal council and they're going to vote out a very predictable boot, but they're still going to vote somebody out right now. And you're like, we just watched that man almost die. Like, what are we doing? So I was surprised they went there here. Because I thought, and somebody had brought this up, so I can't take credit for it, but I thought that it would have been cool too if they get to the mat, get ready, and Jeff says, drop your buffs, we're switching tribes now, so you can have three tribes of five, run the challenge with new tribes, and we don't have a full-blown disaster tribe, so if somebody goes home, it doesn't feel as unfair. I'm not even saying this feels unfair, but how do you get up for this? I mean, you've been an athlete, I've been an athlete, we know athletes. How do you get up for this? This is like when Damar Hamlin had the heart issue and the teams just said, we're not playing anymore. We're not coming back out. How do you get up for this immediately after losing that kind of guy in this kind of situation?
Well, in looking at the immunity challenge from last night, I learned one thing that I thought was interesting. That challenge was designed to be, they said it could have gone 3-on-3-on-3. They said, but if they wanted to, it was also designed to go 3-on-4-on-5 if they had to. So as they see the numbers start to come down, they make sure that the challenges match up with it. And I was like, well, that's interesting. Anyway, so that's number one. Number two, that challenge was, I wasn't entertained as a viewer. It made me feel bad and like not in a good way. I was like, wow, this is so sad. Like super, super sad. And I don't know what was wrong with Jeff yesterday. Was it me specifically, or was he like extra in there pouring salt and sodium in every wound during that puzzle? I have never seen him so relentless. Sophie's about to cry, and Jeff's like, man, this is embarrassing. There is no way they could come back to that. Call your parents and tell them to give it up right now. They raise losers. I was like, Jeff, what is that? Like, he was just in there relentless for a solid few minutes. And he didn't even like let it end. He's like, there's no need. They could just stop now and go to trial. I'm like, Jeff, dude, they just lost somebody. Calm down.
Well, and I think that was what was so hard about this situation is Jeff is still trying to do the show in the way that he's supposed to do the show, right? He's supposed to call the challenges. He's supposed to go all in. He's supposed to do, you know, hey, you're losing. I got to call it the way it is. But it's was there supposed to be some sort of kid gloves? I truly thought, and I get, and my dog is just walking around here. So first, if I lose power, Philip, you just keep talking. I'm going to find a way back into this podcast. But right. I do think with Jeff, this was such a weird situation because when a team is losing, he always roasts them. He always rips them. But it feels almost mean, even though I know Jeff's not being mean, it feels almost mean-spirited because we are watching three unbelievably demoralized people.
Yeah.
Just sucking at a puzzle, which also stop ending challenges with puzzles. It's the same shit every time. If you're bad at this, Jason keeps winning for his tribe because he's great at puzzles. Blue mm-hmm. keeps losing because they suck at puzzles. Stop doing puzzles.
But for this season specifically, in hearing that it's the hottest that it has ever been in PG, they were dealing with things that they've never had to deal with before. We can see the whole heat and lack of food and nutrition really take out cognitive functioning. We're like, I don't know if they're that bad at puzzles or they're just that drained and that out of it. I'm like, I can't tell whether it's a skill set issue or whether they don't even remember each other's names at this point. Like they haven't eaten in 6 days. We were on day six. And I was like, oh, this is so rough. They can't be expected to also flawlessly solve a puzzle.
Well, yeah. And you have what Jeremiah kept calling Alex Jake at tribal council. He just kept doing it over and over again. He kept saying, hey. Yeah. And this is something that I'm finding strange about how Jeff is talking about the season, because you're picking up on this because you're reading things, you're seeing this. But they're not, again, they're not really talking about it much on the show. Jeff has said it to Sophie a couple times, but we're not getting this, oh, it's extreme heat. In Cambodia, when Caleb went down, I think on that day, they said that the temperature was about 114 or something ridiculous like that with the heat index. And it was just out of control. And that's why Caleb went down as brutally as he did. On this season, they're mentioning, oh, it's hot. And Jeff keeps saying it's this hot, it's that hot, it's this hot, it's that hot. And yes, it might be impacting, but that's another thing I think is being lost on the viewer a little bit, because when you're not hearing all the time, or if there's not a little thing at the bottom that says 106 degrees, we watched Guatemala. They did a 10-mile march and it was like 111 and humid. You know what I mean? So it's like when you're watching it this way, unfortunately, because the standard viewer isn't paying attention to every article and everything like that, they're saying, man, these people just suck at these challenges. They're just dumb. What's wrong with them? I don't get it. But I'm in agreement with you. They might actually not be nearly as bad at puzzles as they are. You're just out there. You're not eating. You keep losing. Will brought it up last night. The tribe that loses just keeps getting punched until they're just decimated because they keep taking away Flint. They keep doing this. How do you ever get your footing back?
You don't. And that's why we need that reset, that like swap tribes. Let's get some new personalities in there. Just to give everyone some timeline context, 48 did their season when we shot Deal or No Deal Island. We were home the first week in August. And so this shot right around the same time as Australia versus the World. So it was about 4 weeks after that. So they're like right in that like August, September. Like it is hot, humid, gross. It's bad.
Yeah. And it's clearly impacting them, but I guess what my other issue is, and you know, when we talk about disaster tribes and stuff, it's just become so stale. It's something we've seen so much that even though I said it last night, I really like Sophie, I really like Alex, I do feel like I'm bonded with this tribe a little bit more than other disaster tribes because they just lost Jake in this way, right? Like people forget, because Australia is now always known as one of the meanest spirited casts or whatever because of their real life, but people forget that you were actually rooting for Kucha after Scoopin went down, because you were saying to yourself, oh my God, how could you not root for the people that had the advantage and then got somebody medevaced? Of course you're going to pull for them. Now they're the underdogs. They have the story. And so Sophie and Alex certainly have that story, but you're still saying, okay, here's the storyline. It's such a bummer we have to be here again. I just watched this. And so I'm ready for them to mix this up. I hope that season 50, we already know, is going to be three tribes, but I'm hoping that by them doing two tribes on this season, like we're going to get on Wednesday, I'm hoping that they see the benefit of that and they try to go back that route for season 51, at least start the game with 10 and 10 or something like that.
Yeah, I think this is the hardest part about the production schedule for Survivor, because on every other show you have almost 8-9 months between, so you can kind of read what people are saying, read whatever else, and people have been like, can we stop three tribes since after 48? But the issue is 48 and 49 shot back to back, so like they can't really take any of that information into account because the next season's already done. And so I think it's always weird with the odd numbers seasons, because we see weird, I don't want to say mistakes, but weird choices made that didn't work already. We see them again and we're like, oh, we're still doing this.
Okay, yeah. Cool. Yeah. Because and I think that's totally fair. I mean, look, that I was talking about this season 25. We were so excited. It was three tribes. First time we'd seen three tribes since All-Stars. So season 8 all the way to 25. And we were 21 to 24 is the worst stretch. We're doing it for the podcast right now for the Patreon. It's been a disaster. I hate talking about those seasons because they're so bad. 25 was a breath of fresh air. And then 26, 27 didn't have it. And then they went back to three tribes and they would put three tribes in here and there. I think the problem with the new era is it's been the same exact format every time. They don't always swap. They don't always do whatever, but you are starting 18 people, three tribes every time. Now that wasn't always the case. You know, you have a season like Second Chance. They start with 20. At 18, they go to three tribes, or at whatever number it is, 17. I don't remember. Maybe it was 16, but they go to three tribes at some point from two tribes. Maybe they go back to two tribes. Whereas this has been three tribes, three tribes, three tribes, three tribes. And it's become very monotonous. And you pointed it out right at the beginning. Four is all you need. And that's all people are shooting to get. And then you just want to be the top three in that four. And it starts to become, okay, it's just a numbers game every time. And there really isn't much you can do to get outside of it, except for when Mary plays a shot in the dark and is randomly safe, but that's accidental. She didn't actually do anything to better her game. So yeah, it's tough. I mean, I also think that they knew for season 50, they were going to do three tribes because three tribes of eight, you wanted 24 people. It makes sense. You can't do two tribes there. You can't eliminate people fast enough to in a 13 episode season. But I'm just hoping that after they go back two tribes, and I hope they listen on this.
What are your views on there's an idol out there. Let's all go do it together as a family. I was like, I can't.
I you know what? My question is now, and Will and I were talking about this, Philip, and I wonder what you think. They had what if MC and Rizzo end up on the same tribe? Where are they hiding this idol? Like, they have to move the idol now, right? Because they don't it says you don't get this until you lose a challenge.
Right.
Well, what if this happens where they swap? I don't know if they were necessarily planning on swapping at this point.
So just in listening to On Fire this morning, what Jeff said is that all the swaps and stuff are already pre-planned. And he said that it helps keep him accountable and not have to change the game for the players that are in it. He's like, it helps because I map out the whole thing regardless of who's in it and be like, okay, here's the plan. But I do think that, again, you need to receive the feedback and be able to read the room and be like, pivot. We can't watch those two people on a tribe because nobody wants to watch that. So I don't know if it was supposed to happen. But again, if they haven't lost the challenge, then technically don't they not get to vote ever? Well, like how would that work?
I have no idea. I don't know. And I do think, look, I think that I don't know if it's exactly set in stone of we have to do it at 15. I do think that there are some safety levers in there, right? Of if a tribe gets down to two, we will swap and we will do 14, right? Like, or we will merge at 13. Like, I'm sure that they have, if you hit this number and there's a tribe is down to two, we'll do a full swap. And they have that contingency plan in place for what needs to happen. I think that though, like when you're asking about just the idol in general, when we watched it with Blue, it was kind of fun. The problem is if idols just keep becoming, wow, we should all do this together. Isn't this nice? And then you get one person who says, well, it's mine. I'm going to keep it. That also now becomes a repetitive storyline. That also becomes something that becomes a little over the top. And it becomes boring in some instances because, you know, even though Riz God has it, he just told everybody knows the drama around idols used to be, do they have one? Do they not have one? I need to be paranoid that they do have one. Let's split the vote because I'm scared. The smaller tribes create more camaraderie like this, especially in a season when there's disaster tribes, which we've seen almost every season. And so when that happens, they say, well, we'll stick together and we'll take out the other side. So let's find this together. I like that MC and Steven kept that hidden from everybody else. I'm much more interested in that storyline than Rizzo finding his and just having
it. I think that idols is one of quite a few things that I have learned in the past few months that like Australia does significantly better than America. That I was like, yeah, they do a much better job. But also in America's defense per se, if there's only six of them on the island, imagine going on vacation with a group of six of you. If one of you is missing, you're very much aware. But on, let's say, a tribe of 12, you don't know where everyone is at all times. So you have a little bit more freedom. And so it all goes back to no more three tribe. Like, we don't need it anymore.
Yeah, exactly. And it feels like the way they're setting up the idols is for them to have to be community idols, right? I mean, you know, with the ball and chain aspect of this, you can't really do this without everybody finding out, or at least with some people finding out. So we'll see how it goes. Somebody had said a couple weeks ago that the birdcage was still the best version of this. I agree. I think yes. The birdcage was super exciting, and it's a shame that they never brought that back. Maybe because Carolyn just did it so well that they were like, well, we'll never top that. But I do wish that we would go more of that route. We'll see what happens with idols. I feel like they're testing something here with 49 for 50. I think that 49 is the testing ground to see what's going to work and what's not going to work so that we can keep going for 50. And so this whole ball and chain doing this, I think that while this is occurring on this season, it is so that they can work the kinks out before they get to the season that really matters in their eyes.
If we have learned anything, even from just the three episodes of 49 that we've had, when we get to next season, new era and old player and old era are playing two different games. Like, I feel like we thought they were, but now that we see how it's going, we're like, no, they're literally showing up expecting two very different things. Like, you just can't play the same anymore. And so I don't know which will allow itself to be more successful, but I know that, like, the survivor of, let's say, seasons like 1 through 20, whatever, is not this
enough. I mean, really, just all the way through 39, pre-COVID, it really is a totally different game. And that will be interesting, you know, when 50 comes around, is if one side dominates the other, does that change the way that Survivor thinks about it? Because Jeff always says the new era is harder, the 26 days is tough, this, you know, he goes on and on about all of that. Now, granted, he's trying to sell his show, so maybe he doesn't believe everything he's saying. He's trying to sell his show, but he is still saying those kinds of things. If they turn around and old school beats the crap out of the new school players, is that going to change the way that Jeff views the game? Because now, look, like, we just had Colby's old ass come out here and beat everybody. Like, that would be crazy. And I would be all here for that because I love Colby. But, but, you know, we could potentially see something like that. So they are definitely going to be playing two different games. But it also goes to the point of people always try to, we love ranking things in Survivor, right? I mean, the whole thing of Survivor is you're being eliminated in order. So it's you're either 18th or 17th or 16th or 15th. We love ranking. And then people want to rank seasons and they want to rank players. They want to rank winners. They want to rank this. I don't know how to rank the new era mixed in with the old school because it is two totally different games. And so, like, if somebody like Sophie Bellarity were to win this season, I can't say that she played better or worse than Denise. She played a totally different game than Denise, even though they were in the exact same situation. So that's what's hard for me.
I mean, that was... That was very much the argument on, is Parvati a true, whatever, like, three-time winner after All-Stars? Because technically it was an abbreviated season and it was a different, in my eyes and in my heart, yes. But for some people, they're like, well, it wasn't technically a full, I'm like, okay, but, like, it's about as close as you can get. Do you want to compare it or not? Like, I don't know. She won. It's fine. Yeah,
exactly. And when you put us in those positions, it's hard. Now, somebody had said it's like the Olympics versus, like, the NBA, right? So you have your NBA finals and then you have your Olympic gold medal.
Yeah.
Olympic gold medal sounds cooler, but it might be a little bit easier to win, especially if you're on the US team. And I think Parvati won an Olympic gold medal. And if she has won, you know, NBA Finals Championship. She has one Olympic gold medal. Those are both really exciting things to have, right? You don't be mad about having those. But, you know, people just go kind of over the top. You can't talk about Parvati. You know how this is. You're friends with Parvati. You know how it goes. You can't talk about Parvati in a sane way. Her stans will come for you. You can't say anything.
Listen. Okay, but regardless of, like, who the winner was, that was a very big argument. And I was like, well, and they were like, and I can only throw it out there as this. I don't have an answer, but do you qualify the winner of Big Brother versus the Big Brother reindeer games on the same level? I don't know.
I made that comparison and people got so mad at me. So let's move off of that. But so let's talk about this. So we're going to have a tribe swap coming up. We don't know what the tribes are going to look like. But going into the tribe swap, this is the question I'm asking as many people as I can.
Cool.
Who are you rooting for?
MC.
Okay. Why MC?
I think that MC is, I see a lot of myself in her. I think she has the perfect blend of skill sets to do well at the game. I think in working in sales and being a personal trainer, you have to be a really good listener in sales of being like, okay, well, this is what the client needs. That's not necessarily what we sell, but I can make that work. I can pivot a little bit. And being a personal trainer, I know this myself, it's not about bringing people where you want them to go. It's about meeting them where they are. And both of those skills kind of lend themselves well to the game that I'm like, that is the perfect blend that you would need to do well here. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And for me with MC, what's funny is episode one, I knew nothing about her. Episode two, I said, ooh, she's playing the game. And then in this episode, she's doing the Camp Rock dance because she's duping her entire tribe. And I can get on board with that kind of thing. Right. So I'm happy, you know, MC makes sense to me. What I constantly keep hearing, though, when I do ask this question, is pretty much Sophie or Alex. That's what people are saying because they're the two people that we have spent so much time with.
Right.
But what's interesting about this is I don't like Malcolm and Denise. That worked out perfect for Survivor. Cedric and Mary did not work out perfect for Survivor, right? When they got down to where they were, they didn't have as much of an edit. So Sophie or Alex could absolutely win the season. But if your winner isn't Sophie or Alex, if your winner is somebody from red or somebody from yellow, you have a majority of the audience who's three episodes in not rooting for those people. They might like certain moments. They might like what Rizzo did in episode one. They might think that's funny. They might think Savannah is really good TV. They might like Nate because he's the older guy who's just trying to vibe, right? But I do think that with Alex and Sophie, that's where people are going right now. And, you know, I have Turgenstein over here who says, yeah, Phil, because their tribe is being decimated and they have to show content. Yes, but the thing with that is we have seen other three tribe starts where last season when Green was losing, they weren't showing that much content of them. Say got a bunch, but mainly they were showing Kyle. They were showing Joe. They were showing Eva. So I do feel like right now you have a vast majority of the audience who's just coming in saying, well, I'm rooting for the two blue people because I don't really know the other people that way.
Yeah, I think that oddly enough, I think this is a hot take. I'm sorry. If Jeremiah was on one of the other tribes, he actually would have probably been out earlier. Like, I think he would have been a number one or two. I think that he just happened to get a good blend of people that were willing to, like, understand him. I think we can all admit that Jeremiah is an acquired taste, and the people that surround Jeremiah are good. They understand him and they're like, yes, this. But there are probably people outside of that circle that are like, he is the worst. And so I think it's just kind of a love him or hate him situation. And he kind of lucked out on a tribe where people were willing to hear him and support him as quirky and as eccentric as he is.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. But the problem is Jeremiah is on a different tribe. Jeremiah could be like Shannon and Sage, where he gets time to bond with people and they don't lose, right? Yeah. That's the tough part here. And I think that's what's so hard. Annie and Nicole, I don't know what their Survivor upside is. I actually had pretty high hopes for both of them to go pretty far on this season, but I don't know if either one of them really ever could have won Survivor. When I look at Jake, when I look at Jeremiah, those are people who could have gone further on a season, right? Those are people who on a different season, if they play 48, if they play 47, if they play 46, they absolutely could have won the show. And it's always interesting to see what kind of people, what players get on one of those dominant tribes. I'm looking at Abby Maria again to keep this with Philippines, you know, she's a pain in the ass and I love her for it. But when she's on that show, she's rubbing everybody the wrong way. They don't lose. So she gets to hang around. She makes it further than a lot of other people. And I think that's what we're in for right here, where somebody like Sage, where we finally hear her talk about something other than poop and pee and sweating and all that, we finally get some more backstory on her. And it feels like they're starting to set her up to be a person who goes further. Sage is somebody who could be the first boot on almost any season of Survivor if her tribe loses. But if they don't lose, what do you do with Sage? You don't vote Sage out. You keep Sage around. Sage plays the game. Sage does what she does. So it's always interesting how much your starting tribe really does matter. I mean, Caleb is another great example. Caleb could win any season of Survivor, but he gets on the Lulu Losers and they're like, this guy's threatening and he's been playing. Let's get him out.
Yeah, that is definitely one of the things that I really wonder about, as far as, do you think they get their full, we're going to put all these people on the show, then split them? Or do you think they start splitting them like a couple rounds before finals just to see what they still need, if that makes sense?
Yeah, that does make sense. I don't know what the exact answer to that is. I'm sure that there's a bit of a mix there. I'm sure like it depends on the season. I think now in the 40s, they're probably choosing their cast and then putting them on tribes. Maybe like 16 of the players or something like that, right? And then you might have two or three spots that are left because you're not trying to fill a theme. Whereas I think in the past, if you were going brains, brawn, beauty, you're saying to yourself, okay, let's try to find an extra beauty here. Let's try to find an extra brain. Let's try to find an extra brawn, something like that. Whereas on this show, I don't think that's what's happening. I do think though, and I forget who exactly pointed it out when I had them on, somebody pointed out that the two people being kicked off the show from Yellow really might have messed up the even split of the tribes, because you got MC and Jason who came in. MC's the best physical competitor on the season, maybe out of anybody right now.
Yes.
And Jason is by far the best puzzle person.
Mm-hmm.
You would not have those two people on the same tribe if you were setting the tribes originally. So I do think that Hina became overpowered because of the two people who got kicked off the show beforehand, which is a really rare random instance.
They said put 20 pounds of coconuts on your back and still win. And they said, done, easy. Insanity.
That's Philip's dream as the physical trainer. He's over here like, give me those people. I'm ready to work.
Everybody, I want it.
Yeah. So I don't know if that answers your question, but that's where I think that goes, is it's a little bit up in the air.
So if you are Alex, is there a scenario where you don't use the idol?
Okay. I have to ask you, because you've been there with TV cameras, and I know you didn't play Survivor, but you had TV cameras in your face.
Yeah.
Can you ever get the inkling from the people enough that you say, I feel confident, from the producers, from anything, from what you're hearing? Can you ever get that? Because in my opinion, watching the show, 0% chance I don't play that idol. I am playing that idol every single time. So is there any insight you can give to why you wouldn't play that idol in that situation?
It's hard. For me personally, I am an anxious person. I think all the millennials are. We're like, well, everybody hates me here. And so like you're immediately, even if you feel good, you never feel 100% good. I was the only person on my show that packed my suitcase every night. We walked in there, my suitcase was packed in case, because once you get eliminated, they like pack up your shit for you and bring it to the hotel. And I was like, well, I don't want to forget anything. And so I wasn't being a negative person. I was just like, well, in case. I never put anything in a drawer. I never edited it, because I think the moment you start to feel permanent is when you let down the guard, and that's when you go home. And so for me, again, I'm with you. There was never a time where I wasn't going to play that idol, because I was like, well, mathematically, it would help me more in the long run. But it turns out I won't be here in the long run if I don't play it. So it doesn't matter.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, people were in NFL season. So people always do the survivor pools for NFL, pick the team. If they win, you keep going. But you want to go through the entire year without getting a loss. That's the only way you can win. And a lot of people will try at the beginning of the year to, well, I'm going to pick this team and I'm going to save this other team for later. I'm going to save the Bills. I'm going to save the Lions. I'm going to save those powerhouse type teams that we have right now. But if you're not around for week 7 because you got eliminated in week 1 because you took the Bengals to win a football game, you know, that's the issue that you run into. And I think that's pretty much the same with the idol. If you have a sure thing, very rarely on a reality TV show do you have a sure thing. Take the sure thing.
If they guarantee you 75 grand, take it. Because you might not have anything else. And so you're like, you know what? Okay.
Okay, take the 75 grand. I love that. I know, that's what Daryl Seymour said. Philip actually came in second. Okay.
I mean, there was mathematically a chance, spoiler alert if you didn't watch my show, sorry. If let's say the last briefcase was $2,500, I won the show technically. So like, it's one of those where I don't like to leave things up to chance. And I was like, okay, cool, great, done.
And I think that goes to your personality. I also think that if you were on a tribe of 5, maybe you say, okay, I'll keep this. We just lost somebody to an injury. We know that there's probably going to be something coming up. But when everything's been going wrong for you, you can't in this situation. You can't. And look, you're at this point now where even if you really trust Sophie, even if you love Sophie, you're at the point where all of you like each other. This was the group of 4 that we talked about that dominated the tribe of 6. So they're going to run this until the end. That's already happened. So now if you're Alex, how can you feel that good? If it's Jake sitting there, I don't play the idol. Me and Jake are going through. I'm confident in that. I know that. But when it's Jeremiah and Sophie, the two who knew they had to team up a little bit because of how close me and my bromance of Jake were, no way I don't play that idol. No way.
I've been super impressed with Sophie's overall gameplay. And this is this is not misogyny speaking in the least, but I just think that to be on an island with all the males left, I think not only did she hold her own, but like she kind of led the way on a lot of it. And I was like, okay, Sophie, let's go.
Yeah. And I love her doing the, she's spying through the trees and pulling up Tony Blachos. Mm-hmm. I love that. I love that. She's playing the game and she's clearly a huge fan. And yeah, I mean, that's the South Florida Cuban. That's just like, that's just that personality. It's just the Miami kind of the Miami woman, man. Don't ever discount the Miami woman who's lived their entire life in Miami. D won the game. And don't be surprised if Sophie's walking out of here as the winner too.
Has Sophie with an E said anything yet?
Last week she said, oh no, they're trying to come for me. She didn't say anything this week. Look, they were actually, there was a joke that's been going around where it's Jeff got more confessionals than Matt, Sophie, and Christina combined in this last episode.
Fair.
Not good. Not good. And I get, look, Jeff, again, people are going to give Jeff a hard time no matter what he does. I think Jeff handled the situation well. He left me with questions and I don't like questions. And I think his answers have been a little, oh, well, that's what we're supposed to say. And I want the real answer. And I know I don't like when my entertainment and media people start feeling like politicians where they're almost trying to get my vote. Just tell me what happened. And when you give 3 points and two of them contradict each other, I don't know if I believe you. So
the hard part about Jeff right now is it's actually so good and also so bad. So good because he's so emotionally invested in the game. He's an executive producer. He's there on auditions, the Zooms, everything. His heart is truly there and it shows. Here's why that's so bad. Now he's also protecting the game. And so he doesn't give you honest answers anymore because also like financially, this is his child and he needs to make sure that it survives, for lack of a better term, as long as possible. So it's good and bad. Like, I don't think we've ever had a host that's been this emotionally, psychologically, and financially invested in their show. And that's amazing. But at the same time, you're like, but be real with us for just a second.
Yeah, Jeff. That's all I want. Just 1 second. And I do think that you can tell if you follow Jeff as closely as, I mean, I remember when Jeff was writing blogs during Survivor Gabon for Entertainment Weekly. Like that's how long I've been following. What does Jeff say after an episode? You can tell when Jeff is BSing and when Jeff is telling the truth, right? You can. He was authentically concerned last night, but also with the cameras rolling and everything like that, once they realized it was a dry bite and that Jake was okay, it was, okay, let's capture this. Let's do this. If they would have put Jake back into the game, I would have been like, okay, are we, you know, stroking our own egos here a little bit? But pulling Jake from the game, it's no, we just want to document this so that it can go out there. This is, you know, what our team did, and this is how we came to the decision. Problem is then the decision comes, and I say, wait, I still don't understand the decision. And I'm going to keep harping on that, guys, all season. And I'm sure people are going to get annoyed with me saying it, but I just wish that it was a clear-cut, straightforward answer. And yeah, Jeff is tough sometimes with this stuff because he's never going to tell you this season sucks. He shouldn't, right? Why would you? But so I do think that there's part of it that's also a little out of touch with which seasons the actual fan base is enjoying, such as 47, I think was way better received than 48, but they put three people from 48 on 50 and only one from 47. I don't know. So
I have learned from Jeff which actual seasons he's excited for just based on the adjectives that he uses. Mm-hmm. I think he's a man of very specific words and languages. And so when you're like, how's next season? He's like, man, there are so many twists and turns. It is unexpected. The man never said good. The man never said great, never said amazing. He's just like, you will never guess all the things that happen, which is what people in sales do when we're like, here's how we hype it up. But like, we're not really giving you any information. And so technically, like at the end of it, you're like, well, he wasn't lying. We weren't expecting this. And you're like, that's fair.
And so that's what I'm saying. With 49, he's been sitting here saying, oh, it's really hot and it's brutal early on. He's not saying good things about the season early on. Like, he's not happy that Jake got pulled, obviously, right? He's not happy with how this shook out. He's not happy that this entire tribe got decimated. And who knows? Alex could be the next boot. Sophie could be the next boot. He could be down an entire tribe before we even get to the merge. Who knows?
I mean, that would be historic.
Yeah, let's throw this comment up here because I always love a good super chat. Worth playing for. If the snake bit three people, do you think they would have pulled all three, even if all three were dry bites? So this is obviously a crazy hypothetical, but I understand where this is coming from. It's saying Jake got bit. It was a dry bite. They pulled him. Will and everybody has said the odds of this snake biting three people is insanely low. You would have a better chance of getting struck by lightning 12 times probably.
Yeah,
but in that situation, do you think they're pulling 1/6 of the cast if that happens, if multiple people get bit?
I always wondered that as far as like COVID or food poisoning or something that would actually sweep out like a group of three or four of them being like, what do we do here? I have no idea if there's, I mean, I assume at this point there's a plan in place for it, but like we've never actually seen it happen, but we know that. So let's say they win a reward and it's sometimes it's something weird and it's like barbecue ribs or whatever else. It's out in the hot sun. It's not refrigerated or whatever else. They all eat it. Everyone's sick. What do we do? At that point, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, and to kind of answer this back during David versus Goliath, when Pat gets medevaced in the first episode, when they don't capture it because he's on the boat and he gets the back injury, you look in the background, Carl smashed his head and could have had a concussion. And they were concerned that he did. And Carl has been very open about it. If you want to go listen to his tell-all with us, he's talking about it where he's like, yeah, I'm walking. You see me in the back. They're holding me and I'm holding my head and stuff. I don't know if they would have pulled Carl in that situation. And that's where I do think, again, and I don't want to undermine what Jake went through at all. But part of me does think that he did have more of a say in the decision that was made. And he made the decision that was best for him and best for his family. And I have no problem with that, but I do think there was more of a say in it. I just think it's weird that they didn't give us that the way they gave it to us with Terry or B back in Island of the Idols or whatever season it was. It was Ghost Island. Like they didn't give it to us in that same way. No, it was David versus Goliath. What am I doing? So that's what my biggest complaint is with how last night went.
So the medical professional that we got to see take care of Jake, interestingly enough, he was brand new. Actually, so he's not like the usual one that is on the set. And so when he was being like onboarded by Jeff, he was like, listen, you might have to make a call if someone has to like leave the game or something. He's like, but that is few and far between. The odds are you will not have to do that. And that was like his first big thing he had to do. So I think also for him, he was playing it pretty safe because he didn't want to have like if he sent Jake back and Jake passed out that night. Once again, he's at least a half hour away. So yeah. Like it could have gotten bad so fast. So I think that also if it were the regular medical professionals there, would they have made the same call? I don't know. I just can't say with 100% certainty that they would have.
Yeah, because that guy we didn't recognize. We've seen Ramona. We've seen Dr. Joe. Like we've seen those people before. We've never seen this guy. And here's the thing. There's half hour away. But also you could say, hey, we're going to have a medical professional be on that island for the next 12 hours. And you're going to have anti-venom and you're going to have this and you're going to have that. And look, we're going to check his vitals another time. This happened with James back in Fans vs. Favorites when he had the finger issue. They had him. They checked it. We got to check that again. We got to check that again. They do this all the time. And a lot of times it's happening off screen. We see Sophie Bellarity with her skin falling off, everybody thought. But it was really just a Band-Aid. You're not seeing when that's being administered and stuff like that. But there's some sort of medical that's going on. So I think that they could have done something else, but I do think you're probably right that this was play this as safe as humanly possible. And again, if this was Jake's decision, it's the right decision for Jake. I think that this is one of the more, if Jake had left and he had said, this is my choice, I'm leaving. It's probably the most understandable I'm leaving the game in the history of the show with all the circumstances. And if the game really needed to pull him, I just wish the guy would have been more affirmative with it. If Jake was more in his right mind, because I know he had just gone through like a massive panic attack, a near-death experience, all that. A lot of people were saying it was shock and all of those things. Definitely. He has no idea what's going on. If he had been more in his right mind, I do think he would have been, well, what's the danger? What's going on? Because we hear people ask those questions all the time and we never got that.
So my question is, if Jake is just like an American guy from like New York City, Boston, Chicago, is he going to allow that to happen? Because a lot of that seemed, again, very polite and Canadian. And the doctor was like, I think so. And he goes, I trust this man. And I was like, okay, Jake, fine. But like, I think that's really just who he is. And in knowing him outside of the game, he's so polite and he's willing to put other people before him. And I almost wanted to be like, yeah, you didn't really like stand up super hard for that, but okay, that's fine.
I also think that, you know, what if this is a single person that we're talking about, right? What if this is somebody else on the island? I don't know who's single. I mean, I don't think Jeremiah is married or anything, doesn't have a kid. I don't know, but I don't think so. So if this is Jeremiah and this happens to Jeremiah, does Jeremiah say, no, it's okay, Rizzo. We know Rizzo's not married, right? Does Rizzo say, hey, I got bit by this. It's not venomous. I'm back. It's okay. You know, I'm not worried. Like Jake's running through his head. He kept saying, I have a kid on the way. I have a kid on the way. I have a kid on the way. Like that's all he's thinking about as this is taking place. So I do wonder if there would have been a little bit of a different reaction to the situation as well from somebody who's not in the situation Jake was in. We knew what Jake was playing for, which is also why it's a bummer that he goes out this way even more so, because he's one of the few people where I felt like his storyline of like with his wife and with his kid and then his dad with glaucoma and all that, it's like those are at least different than I was picked on when I was a kid, which it feels like pretty much everybody else's storyline is. So, you know, that's where it really does suck that he goes out in this fashion.
You were not getting Riz out of the game. That man would have been horizontal and looked right in there and said, send me back to the island also. Hit me up on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitch at RIZEOD. You're like, okay, sir, we've had enough. Please, thank you.
Yeah, he would have been like, I actually didn't get bit. This is a bit. You've all been fooled. Thank you.
Commit to the bit in this family. I'm like, I can't with this man. I can't do it.
Oh, Rizzo. And I think, and so last night I made the comment where, Sage had the line of, you know, I lost my friends doing this and I was, you know, constantly kind of just left out. And it brings me back to high school. Look, Philip, I know you have a stutter. I had, you know, not the same, but I had red hair growing up. Everybody wants to make fun of the redhead kid, right? You're the freckle face. You're the clown. You're the evil one, which like, look, might not seem like it hurts much, but to like 5, 6, 7 year olds, it hurts. The thing is though, like I feel like they really want to harp on this with the edit. Everybody's had some sort of bullying or something in their past. Even the biggest, strongest guy. I mean, Philip over here is a bodybuilder at this point. I don't know if you guys can tell or not, but like everybody's had something where this has happened. And I feel like this show is focusing on as if it's like super unique. And I'm not saying that what Sage went through, I'm not trying to diminish it, or what Steven went through, I'm not trying to diminish it, but it is one of those things where I feel like they harp on it so much. It just starts to feel like, okay, do you have anybody who had a good childhood? You had anybody who's not still holding on to this in their late 20s, early 30s of what happened to them in high school?
So I have insight. I am a very confident person in the real life. I literally lead fitness classes all day. I'm on the microphone. I'm screaming. I'm yelling. I'm doing whatever else. Reality TV has, if your childhood or growing up was a muddy puddle and the heavy things have sunk down to the bottom, reality TV has a way of being the stick that stirs it all up. And because if you really think about it, just like looking at it on paper, as adults, we surround ourselves with people that enjoy being with us and want to include us in things. And literally survivor by nature is who can we leave out. And adults don't deal well with being left out because that's not a thing that we do. We work a job that it requires our work for the task to be successful. So we're not just allowed to like leave somebody out. You're like, no, you're the account executive. You get the sale. Then I do this. And so like, we just do these things where our presence is appreciated and celebrated. And on reality, you're like, these people are leaving me out. And the only time we can really reference is elementary school. Like that's all we have, because no normal adult does that in their own life. What I also will say is that the producers are good at what they do. They know what to ask and when to ask it. And a lot of the editing, you can, as a reality TV person, you can tell when the editing is weird. On my show, I got left out of that whole, like, you go and pick someone else after you. So no one picked me. I was at the end. Joe Manganiello was like, oh, Phil, you look like you are really out of it right now. And I was like, yeah, it's kind of disheartening that no one picked me. And he's like, what does that bring up for you? And I said, well, it's kind of like elementary school where you're like the last one picked in like phys ed class or whatever else. Cut to the episode. No one picks me. Camera goes over and I'm like, it's just like elementary school. I was like, no, that's not fair. He asked me that and yeah. I answered. So I'll say that like the showrunners are good at knowing what to get out of you. And then they just kind of like get rid of half of it and make you look as vulnerable as humanly possible.
Yeah. No, I totally get that. And it's a really good point you're making of, you know, if you get left out of something as an adult, you just don't really hang out with those people, or you just don't go to that bar, or you just don't go to that house, like whatever it is. Whereas when you're in elementary school, that's where you're in the situation where you don't have a choice, right? You have to be doing whatever it is you're doing. I just wish that the thing is, I feel like it becomes a little bit less relatable when you hear it from so many people. Agreed. Because sometimes you do just want to have, and I always bring up, you know, like Terry Deese, which is way back, but I always bring him up because Terry Deets, you know, he would never tell you about a bad thing that happened in his childhood because it doesn't matter for his story. He doesn't care anymore. And I just wish that they would find something else to make us feel like, wow, that's the tough thing this person's gone through. A lot of what they've been falling back on, and it's like you're saying, the producers know what to ask, but the story starts to sound repetitive, is what was your childhood and what did your parents go through? I don't really care. Like, and I don't mean this to be a dick. I just don't really care what your parents went through. And like, I want to know why you're playing. And if you're playing for your parents, I want to know why you're playing. When you get that $1 million, you say, I'm going to make my parents' life better. But what are you also going to do? Because everybody's going to, yeah, my parents aren't paying for dinner again if I make $1 million. But what are you truly going to do? And I think sometimes they just keep going back to the same plot points over and over again. Because honestly, they might be easy. Like you said, it was easy for Joe to ask you that because he knew exactly what you were going to say.
Yeah. Even when you're doing confessionals, when you get to like a reality show, like in general, you're like day one there, you sit down for, I think we sat down for 2 hours each to just talk about your life. And they ask about all the struggles and why you're playing the game and what you could get out of the game. What are you worried about in the game? All that other stuff. Then they splice that interview with the events that are happening during the show. So a lot of the confessionals that you're seeing are not reacting to what's actually happening. They're just like things that we said at some point once.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And again, this is all that, what is it? It's like reality TV literacy. That's what people call it, right? You got to have media literacy, but then there's a different version of literacy that comes with reality TV literacy. And I will always be the fan. And I've had people, I've seen Survivor players, I've seen other reality TV show people who have said, if you've never played these games, you shouldn't speak on it. My whole thing is, if the only reason these shows are on is because people don't stop talking about them. Agreed. These shows are made for the fans who just keep talking about them. Yes. And I love this stuff. I really do. But I also try to dive into, what is it that is making these different things tick? What is going on? And I love hearing those kinds of insights where it's, guys, this is what you need to be thinking about. They call it the Franken edit back during season 38 with Kelly Wentworth and War Dog, whatever the confessional is, it's the Franken edit. What the hell was that? It makes no sense. It came out of nowhere. It's clearly from like day six or something. And you need to be aware that that stuff is definitely happening and you're being manipulated in some way. And that's why I react so strongly when I do see the situation last night where it's, we're keeping you out of the game, but we're not giving the clearest answer possible. You need to give really clear answers because, look, like, we're watching reality TV. We want it to be black and white. We're not watching some art house movie. We want it to be as straightforward as possible.
Yeah. I think for this show specifically, it's been on for so many years that, like, at this point, we almost don't want storytelling. We just want, like, realness and transparency and honesty of what's actually happening on the island, because, like, there's no story that they're going to be able to tell with this many survivors that we haven't already seen. And so for you, like, it's again hard to be like, and then I was bullied in high school, and you're like, uh-huh, okay, cool. Mm-hmm. But like, it's one of those where I tried not to give that information without attaching it to something else, just in knowing that they could use it however you want. And I was like, yo, listen, here's the thing, I always spoke differently than everyone in elementary school, went to speech for years and years. And they were like, you're going to find a great job one day where you don't have to speak. And so I grew up and I decided that I was only going to do jobs where I have to speak every day. And that speaks to my strength, grit, perseverance. You can't twist that around now. So you just have to make sure, like, if I were to ever go back on another show, I would just make sure that the things I said were very pointed and specific.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd be the guy who, now that the snake bite happened, people are going to be like, I'm not going to play Survivor. So now the casting team's going to desperately call me and say, we know you've applied for 10 years. We've hated you every time, but we need you because we only have 16 people who are willing to play. I'm going to get out there. And my first confessional is going to be, my childhood sucked. And it's just going to be like, you know, I didn't say that. That's not what I meant. That's not what I meant. You're taking it out of context. And then well, we're finally roasting you after what you've put us through, you know?
Listen, the snake works for CBS. I don't care what anybody says. The snake said, please let us put all these viewers out of their misery.
Yeah, I know. I know. And there goes Jake going home. Be with his family. It's awesome. Good for him. Anything else you want to talk about with this episode? Are you feeling good?
No, I'm feeling good. I do think that when a player like Jake goes home, it was a player like David going home last year. I think it really does open the gate for almost every other player now. Like it's one of those things where, like, if it's an endurance challenge of holding things over your head or whatever else, I'm sorry, you aren't winning that. But I will say that, like, now when a player like that goes home, everyone has a shot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. And now when it comes to challenges in the individual portion, if it's a puzzle, Jason's going to win. But otherwise, yeah, like MC, like I said, might be the favorite for every challenge moving forward, especially from a physical standpoint. And now Jake's not there to be the man who lifts up heavy objects. So if they're doing any forearm or bicep, it's much more wide open than season 48 was. Much more wide open. So yeah, we'll see how this goes. But Philip, thank you so much for joining. I love it. Thank you for being here. Always a pleasure. I know this is maybe like the fifth time. I mean, you were only on TV like a year ago, and I think you've just been
not even like a year, 9 months, which is insane. Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. So you started in January?
We started, and yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wow. This year has been insane.
The craziest year of my entire life. Yeah.
That just lets me know how crazy my year has also been. Honestly, because I'm sitting here going, it had to have been a year ago. And I'm saying, oh my God, that's right. This was the year where I was doing Australian Survivor, Dondi, Traitors, Survivor, all at the same time. I'm still here. I'm still alive, everybody.
You've been absolutely destroying it. And if you haven't heard recently from another adult, a listener, a viewer, you're killing it. And I just think that I will always show up for you because you know this, you guys were the first podcast that showed up for me, even though Blake hates me. So other than that, I'll always come back for you guys. You know that.
I always appreciate that. And I love having you on, and good luck with everything that you are doing as well. Like I said, last time we talked, I was like, he's just jacked. And then I saw, no, he's actually doing bodybuilding. And I was like, oh, this makes so much more sense. He's just, you know, I was like, that's a guy who works out a lot for no benefit if he's just doing that. So good for you.
You know what? I started getting ready for the show. I watched myself on television and I looked like a Make-A-Wish kid, and I said, nope, no more. And I literally threw on 20 pounds after that show started airing. I was like, oh no, I'm out.
I love that. Well, good for you, and thank you for being here. And yeah, Blake will appreciate you took a shot at him. We knew we couldn't get through this podcast without at least one. Everybody else, John and McKenna are going to be going live with Survivor Rewind after this. I know they're going to be diving into some medevacs, obviously. So that'll be tonight at 6:45. McKenna is also doing the Amazing Race coverage. She's got that going on. So she's got plenty going on. And I think that's all tonight. I will be live on Sunday at 10 a.m. with Sam Phelan from season 47. We're doing predictions and power rankings for the final 14. And then on Monday, Tegwith will be live with Thomas and Bianca from last season. So plenty of stuff going on over here. If you want even more content, patreon.com/thespecialist, become a patron. You can hear us talk about every season matters. We're up to One World now. So if you want to hear us talk about One World, come suffer with us. It's a good time. And otherwise, that's it. That's all we got. Thank you for being here. Like this video, subscribe to the channel, and see you next time.